Chapter 5. Going to Lamrian. Why, in the name of the dear Lord. Mother dear, I can't say why, I must not say why. It would be dishonorable and undutiful to say why. Dishonorable and undutiful? Returned the dame. And is there nothing dishonorable or undutiful in the boy's breaking the heart of his own plighted love, and his mother's heart too, for the sake of the dark secrets and counsels of a wicked stranger? Why did he ever come here? She apostrophized the innocent captain. Who wanted you? Where did you come from? Why couldn't you rest in your own bad place, wherever it is, instead of disturbing the peace of quiet unoffending folk like us? And what, sobbed the poor little kitty, have I ever done to you, you hard and cruel captain, that you should come and serve me so? And then they both began to weep most pitifully, while the captain could only look from the one to the other, and lay hold of himself by the coat collar. Margaret, said the poor young fisherman, on his knees at Kitty's feet, while Kitty kept both her hands before her tearful face, to shut out the traitor from her view, but kept her fingers wide asunder, and looked at him all the time. Margaret, you have suffered so much, so uncomplainingly, and are always so careful and considerate. Do take my part, for poor Hugh's sake. The quiet Margaret was not appealed to in vain. I will, Alfred, she returned, and I do. I wish this gentleman had never come near us. Whereupon the captain laid hold of himself the tighter. But I take your part for all that. I am sure you have some strong reason, and some sufficient reason for what you do, strange as it is, and even for not saying why you do it, strange as that is. And, Kitty darling, you are bound to think, so more than anyone, for true love believes everything, and bears everything, and trusts everything. And, mother dear, you are bound to think so too, for you know you have been blessed with good sons, whose word was always as good as their oath, and who were brought up in as true a sense of honor as any gentleman in this land. And I am sure you have no more call, mother, to doubt your living son than to doubt your dead son. And for the sake of the dear dead, I stand up for the dear living. While now, the captain struck in, with enthusiasm, this I say, that whether your opinions flatter me or not, you are a young woman of sense, and spirit, and feeling, and I'd sooner have you by my side in the hour of danger, than a good half of the men I've ever fallen in with or fallen out with, Aether. Margaret did not return the captain's compliment, or appear fully to reciprocate his good opinion, but she applied herself to the consolation of Kitty, and of Kitty's mother-in-law, that was to have been next Monday week, and soon restored the parlor to a quiet condition. Kitty, my darling, said the young fisherman, I must go to your father, to entreat him still, to trust me in spite of this wretched change and mystery, and to ask him for some directions concerning Lamrian. Will you come home? Will you come with me, Kitty? Kitty answered not a word, but rose sobbing, with the end of her simple headdress at her eyes. Captain Jorgan followed the lovers out, quite sheepishly, pausing in the shop, to give an instruction to Mr. Pettifer. Here, Tom, said the captain, in a low voice. Here's something in your line. Here's an old lady poorly, and low in her spirits. Cheer her up a bit, Tom. Cheer 'em all up. Mr. Pettifer, with a brisk nod of intelligence, immediately assumed his steward face, and went with his quiet, helpful, steward step into the parlor, where the captain had the great satisfaction of seeing him, through the glass door, take the child in his arms, who offered no objection, and bend over Mrs. Raybrock, administering soft words of consolation. Though what he finds to say, unless he's telling her that T'll soon be over, or that most people is so at first, or that it'll do her good afterward, I cannot imaginate, was the captain's reflection as he followed the lovers. He had not far to follow them, since it was but a short descent down the stony ways to the cottage of Kitty's father. But short as the distance was, it was long enough to enable the captain to observe that he was fast becoming the village ogre, For there was not a woman standing working at her door, or a fisherman coming up or going down, who saw young Raybrock unhappy and little Kitty in tears, but he or she instantly darted a suspicious and indignant glance at the captain, as the foreigner who must somehow be responsible for this unusual spectacle. Consequently, when they came into Tregarthen's little garden, which formed the platform from which the captain had seen Kitty peeping over the wall, the captain brought to, and stood off and on at the gate, while Kitty hurried to hide her tears in her own room, and Alfred spoke with her father, who was working in the garden. He was a rather infirm man, but could scarcely be called old yet, with an agreeable face and a promising air of making the best of things. The conversation began on his side with great cheerfulness and good humor, but soon became distrustful, and soon angry. That was the captain's cue for striking both into the conversation and the garden. "Morning, sir," said Captain Jorgan. "How do you do?" "The gentleman I am going away with," said the young fisherman to Tregarthen. "Oh," returned Kitty's father, surveying the unfortunate captain with a look of extreme disfavor. "I confess that I can't say I am glad to see you." "No," said the captain, "and, to admit the truth, that seems to be the general opinion in these parts. But don't be hasty, you may think better of me by and by."
"I hope so," observed Tregarthen.
"Well, I hope so," observed the captain, quite at his ease. "More than that, I believe so, though you don't. Now, Mr. Tregarthen, you don't want to exchange words of mistrust with me, and if you did, you couldn't, because I wouldn't. You and I are old enough to know better than to judge against experience from surfaces and appearances, and if you haven't lived to find out the evil and injustice of such judgments, you are a lucky man." The other seemed to shrink under this remark, and replied, "Sir, I have lived to feel it deeply."
"Well," said the captain, mollified, "then I've made a good cast without knowing it. Now, Tregarthen, there stands the lover of your only child, and here stand I who know his secret. I warrant it a righteous secret, and none of his making, though bound to be of his keeping. I want to help him out with it, and towards that end we ask you to favor us with the names of two or three old residents in the village of Landrian. As I am taking out my pocketbook and pencil to put the names down, I may as well observe to you that this, wrote atop of the first page here, is my name and address. Silas Jonas Jorgan, Salem, Massachusetts, United States. Apostrophe if ever you take it in your head to run over any morning, I shall be glad to welcome you. Now, what may be the spelling of these said names?"
"There was an elderly man," said Tregarthen, "named David Polreath. He may be dead."
"Well," said the captain, cheerfully, "if Polreath's dead and buried, and can be made of any service to us, Polreath won't object to our digging of him up. Polreath's down, anyhow."
"There was another named Penruin. I don't know his Christian name."
"Never mind his Christian name," said the captain. "Penruin, for short."
"There was another named John Treadgear."
"And a pleasant sounding name too," said the captain. "John Treadgear's booked. I can recall no other except old Parvis."
"One of old Parvis's family, I reckon," said the captain. "Kept a dry goods store in New York City, and realized a handsome competency by burning his house to ashes. Same name, anyhow. David Polreath, unchristened Penruin, John Treadgear, and old Arson Parvis. I cannot recall any others at the moment."
"Thank ye," said the captain.
"And so, Tregarthen, hoping for your good opinion yet, and likewise for the fair Devonshire flowers, your daughters, I give you my hand, sir, and wish you good day." Young Raybrock accompanied him disconsolately, for there was no Kitty at the window when he looked up, no Kitty in the garden when he shut the gate, no Kitty gazing after them along the stony ways when they begin to climb back.
"Now I tell you what," said the captain. "Not being at present calculated to promote harmony in your family, I won't come in. You go and get your dinner at home, and I'll get mine at the little hotel. Let our hour of meeting be 2 o'clock, and you'll find me smoking a cigar in the sun before the hotel door. Tell Tom Pettifer, my steward, to consider himself on duty, and to look after your people till we come back. You'll find he'll have made himself useful to him already, and will be quite acceptable. All was done as Captain Jorgen directed. Punctually at 2 o'clock the young fisherman appeared with his knapsack at his back, and punctually at 2 o'clock the captain jerked away the last feather end of his cigar. Let me carry your baggage, Captain Jorgen. I can easily take it with mine. Thank ye, said the captain. I'll carry it myself. It's only a comb. They climbed out of the village, and paused among the trees and fern on the summit of the hill above, to take breath, and to look down at the beautiful sea. Suddenly the captain gave his leg a resounding slap, and cried, "Never knew such a right thing in all my life," and ran away. The cause of this abrupt retirement on the part of the captain was little Kitty among the trees. The captain went out of sight and waited, and kept out of sight and waited, until it occurred to him to beguile the time with another cigar. He lighted it, and smoked it out, and still he was out of sight and waiting. He stole within sight at last, and saw the lovers, with their arms entwined and their bent heads touching, moving slowly among the trees. It was the golden time of the afternoon then, and the captain said to himself, "Golden sun, golden sea, golden sails, golden leaves, golden love, golden youth, a golden state of things altogether." Nevertheless, the captain found it necessary to hail his young companion before going out of sight again. In a few moments more he came up, and they began their journey. "That still young woman with the fatherless child," said Captain Jorgen, as they fell into step, "didn't throw her words away. But good honest words are never thrown away. And now that I am conveying you off from that tender little thing that loves, and relies, and hopes, I feel just as if I was the snarling critter in the pictures, with the tight legs, the long nose, and the feather in his cap, the tips of whose mustaches get up nearer to his eyes the wickeder he gets." The young fisherman knew nothing of Mephistopheles. But he smiled when the captain stopped to double himself up and slap his leg, and they went along in right good fellowship. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.